Today is Monday, October 5th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. The U.S. president continues his coronavirus treatment.
It's been a very interesting journey. I learned a lot about COVID. I learned it by really going to school. This is the real school.
Plus, fighting between Armenia and Azerbaijan intensifies.
On Sunday, Azerbaijan accused Armenian forces of shelling Ganja, its second city, escalating the conflict that broke out a week ago.
We'll have these stories and more next. U.S. President Donald Trump continues his coronavirus treatment at Walter Reed National Military Medical Center. On Sunday, he posted a short video message.
It's been a very interesting journey. I learned a lot about COVID. I learned it by really going to school. This is the real school. This isn't the let's read the book school. And I get it, and I understand it.
For the latest on what is known about the president's health and recovery, I spoke with White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman.
There's been no Monday briefing yet from the physicians. Now, we got those on both Saturday and Sunday, so there are some expectations that we could be hearing from one or more of the president's doctors at Walter Reed. And there's also expectations, as the physicians indicated over the weekend, that the president might, and I would stress might, be released from the hospital today and come back here to the White House.
Steve, speaking of those briefings over the weekend by the president's medical staff, what did they say about the health of the president?
There are some big unanswered questions from the president's medical team. These medications that he is on, the remdesivir and the dexamethasone, would seem to indicate, according to the opinions of a number of physicians, that the president may be or may have been more seriously ill from COVID-19 than his doctors have indicated. They have been evasive on a couple of points. Number one, about how high his fever was at any point. And also about what they're seeing from examinations of his lungs and whether the president may be suffering from pneumonia. There's some speculation about that. And if that were indeed the case, it would be very surprising if he were to be released from the hospital on Monday.
The vice presidential debate is later on this week, and given the uncertainty of the president's health, it's unknown whether or not the second and possibly third presidential debate will take place. Given that, how else has the president's diagnosis of COVID-19 affected his campaign?
All personal events by the president, these sort of outdoor rallies we've seen, have been canceled for the foreseeable future. But I would expect that the president, once he is released, will really be chomping at the bit and will want to get back out on a campaign trail as soon as possible, especially in light of his opponent, former Vice President Joe Biden, being out there traveling this week.
The president has addressed his supporters and the American people from the White House, from the hospital. But what about the vice president? Is he stepping up to fill in some of the campaign gaps?
Yes, Steve, absolutely. He is scheduled to be out on the campaign trail this week. Now, it'll be interesting to see just what those events are like, whether they resemble the types of mass gatherings that the president has had in recent weeks, where people are not socially distanced and most of them are not wearing masks, or do they more resemble what the Biden campaign has been doing, something that the president himself has mocked with sparse attendance and people sitting in socially distanced circles?
Steve Herman is VOA's White House Bureau Chief. As the president and his wife recover from the coronavirus, one question is how the president's health status will change the race for the White House just a month before Election Day. Michelle Quinn has that part of the story.
There are many unknowns surrounding President Donald Trump's health, including how his battle with COVID-19, the disease caused by the coronavirus, will affect the presidential campaign ahead of the election on November 3rd. According to Johns Hopkins University, more than 35 million people worldwide have been infected by the virus. In a video from the hospital Saturday night, Trump tied his personal battle against the virus with a mission to help others.
But this was something that happened, and it's happened to millions of people all over the world, and I'm fighting for them, not just in the U.S. I'm fighting for them all over the world. We're going to beat this coronavirus, or whatever you want to call it, and we're going to beat it soundly.
The president's illness comes as he and his opponent, former Vice President Joe Biden, enter the final 4 weeks of campaigning. Biden's campaign said it took down negative campaign ads when the president announced he had tested positive for the coronavirus. A debate between Vice President Mike Pence and Biden's running mate, Senator Kamala Harris, is still scheduled for this Wednesday. Multiple national polls show Biden ahead. How will the president's health situation change the remaining weeks of the campaign? The president's illness has forced the Biden camp to be in two modes at once: show concern for Trump's health while also contrast leadership styles between the two candidates. Kate Benningfield is deputy campaign manager of the Biden campaign.
This is not a question of politics. This is a question of the president of the United States getting back to full health as soon as possible. And I think for our campaign, as I say, we're going to continue to make our case for Joe Biden's style of leadership, for his experience, for his unique ability to bring the country together, to find common ground, to find consensus, and to move things forward.
Jason Miller, a Trump campaign senior advisor, said the president has taken many precautions and has proved to be a leader in the fight against the virus.
But also we've seen with Joe Biden, I mean, we can't all just stay in our basement for the rest of our lives. We have to get out there and live our lives and take this on, develop the vaccine, develop more therapeutics, and defeat it.
For Trump, the moment may be an opportunity to reach undecided voters who may make the difference come Election Day, said Alice Stewart, a Republican strategist.
He needs to appeal to these undecided voters, and coming out with a more compassionate tone, embracing the seriousness of this pandemic, will certainly go a long way to swing over the people that have not made their decision yet.
One thing is certain: no one knows what will happen in what was an already contentious battle for the White House. Michelle Quinn, VOA News.
European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen says she has placed herself in isolation after being in contact with a person infected with the coronavirus. AP correspondent Charles de Ledesma reports.
In a message posted on Twitter, the head of the EU's executive arm said she took part in a meeting last Tuesday that was attended by a person who on Sunday tested positive. She said she tested negative for the virus on Thursday and that she will undergo another test later. Her isolation will keep her close to work, though. She has a small living quarters next to her office in the EU headquarters in Brussels. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
With COVID-19 infection rates surging in Turkey, a software application is increasingly seen as a critical weapon to contain the virus and keep the country open. Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul.
Before traveling by coach, plane, or even by car to make a long-distance trip, you must download the Health Ministry's HES computer app and fill out an application. The app then generates a unique barcode that tracks your movements and who you've come near. If a fellow passenger is diagnosed with COVID-19, your details will end up with someone like Dr. Nulufer Atoğlu and her team. They trace those who come into contact with a positive case.
We follow up on all cases the same day with our tracking and medication teams. Reds show positive cases. Now I am going to appoint teams to these new cases. The cases appear on the map automatically. Then we identify the address. I have some tracking teams on the move now. Some of them are here waiting.
Every morning, Atoğlu provides her tracking teams with details about the people they will be visiting. During a visit, the team informs this person about possible contact with COVID-19. They ask if she's displayed any symptoms and tell her to self-isolate for 10 days. A COVID test is done on the spot if needed.
Of course, some people get scared and worry about being infected and what will happen to them, but we calmly explain to them the step-by-step procedure. If they have contact and show symptoms, we take a sample.
Any samples are immediately taken back for testing. The HES app also notifies authorities if a person has broken self-quarantine. Despite Turkey having a widely criticized human rights record, few have so far raised fears that the authorities are misusing the personal data of users. With COVID infections again on the rise, fighting the virus appears to be the people's primary concern. HES apps also inform people of infection hotspots. Health Minister Fahrettin Koca says the app will be used more widely to contain the virus.
HES kodu alarak telefonlarına indirebiliyorlar hayat eve sığar uygulamasını.
By getting a HES app on their mobile phones, people can see the COVID-19 risk situation in the neighborhood they are in. Public offices are also likely to have barcode scanners, and you will only be able to enter these buildings with a HES code.
Turkey's battle to control COVID-19 is now more focused on technology and people like Dr. Ataoğlu and her tracking teams to stop the spread of the virus. Doreen Jones, VOA News, Istanbul.
The World Health Organization said on Monday that roughly 1 in 10 people may have been infected with the novel coronavirus, leaving the vast majority of the world's population vulnerable to COVID-19. Still to come in today's program...
The Nobel Assembly at Karolinska Institutet has today decided to award the 2020 Nobel Prize in Physiology or Medicine jointly to Harvey J. Alter, Michael Horton, and Charles M. Rice for the discovery of hepatitis C virus.
This is VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
Wearing a face mask while in public is an important recommendation to prevent the spread of COVID-19. As the pandemic intensified, misinformation and rumors about COVID-19 prevention measures spread on the internet and in social media. Among them is a now debunked theory that a person wearing a mask can be poisoned by their own exhaled carbon dioxide gas. A new study in the Annals of the American Thoracic Society provides further evidence that masks do not cause overexposure to carbon dioxide. The study authors analyzed oxygen and carbon dioxide levels in healthy individuals and those with chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, or COPD. They found, even among those with seriously impaired lungs, that the effects on breathing while wearing a mask are minimal. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. Armenia and Azerbaijan accused each other on Monday of attacking civilian areas on the ninth day of fighting, the deadliest in the South Caucasus region for more than 25 years. The clashes intensified over the weekend, with both sides accusing the other of targeting civilians. Reuters' David Doyle has more.
An Armenian government video shows the aftermath of what it says is shelling by Azerbaijan's forces on the Nagorno-Karabakh capital, Stepanakert. But intensifying violence has now also spread beyond the border of the breakaway region. On Sunday, Azerbaijan accused Armenian forces of shelling Ganja, its second city, escalating the conflict that broke out a week ago. The Azeri Foreign Ministry said one civilian had died and four were injured, and an aide to President Ilham Aliyev said military targets from which Armenia is firing on Azeri cities would be destroyed. Armenia denies directing fire of any kind towards Azerbaijan, but the leader of Nagorno-Karabakh said his forces had destroyed a military airbase inside Ganja and would target Azeri cities. Armenia says the airport at Ganja has been used as a base for Azeri warplanes to carry out bombing raids on Nagorno-Karabakh, an ethnic Armenian region that broke away from Azerbaijan in a 1990s war, but that is not recognized by any country as an independent republic. Azerbaijan is supported by Turkey, which on Sunday condemned Armenian targeting of Azeri civilians, while Armenia has a defense pact with Russia. Despite appeals for a ceasefire from Russia, the US, France and the EU, fighting has increased, and Azerbaijan said on Saturday that it had captured a string of villages. Both sides accuse the other of targeting civilians, and casualties have run into the hundreds, though precise figures are impossible to obtain. The clashes are the worst since the 1990s, when some 30,000 people were killed, and carry with them the risk of full-scale war between the former Soviet republics that could drag in other powers.
That was Reuters reporter David Doyle. Malian authorities have released 180 Islamist extremists from a prison in the capital and flown them to the country's north. The development late Sunday fueled speculation that prominent opposition politician Soumaïla Cissé could soon be freed after more than 6 months in captivity. Militants also hold Sophie Petronin, a French charity worker who was abducted on December 24th of 2016 in the northern city of Gao. She is presently the last French national held hostage in the world. Germany is calling on Britain to make a big final push to agree on a trade deal with the European Union in the wake of Brexit, especially since the coronavirus pandemic is already hitting economies on both sides of the English Channel very hard. German Foreign Minister said COVID-19 has made an agreement even more urgent for both sides, even though the chances to get even a basic trade deal by the end of the year are declining day by day. Britain's Prime Minister and the head of the EU told their chief negotiators over the weekend to get back together to push intensively to strike a post-Brexit trade deal before time runs out in a matter of weeks. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson has set a deadline of October 15th when the EU leaders meet again in Brussels. While the 27-nation bloc itself said it would be feasible to negotiate until the end of the month. Afghan officials say a suicide car bomber targeted the convoy of a provincial governor in the country's east. The attack killed at least 8 people and wounded 38. A spokesperson said the governor was unharmed in the incident. No one immediately claimed responsibility for the attack. Afghanistan's President Ashraf Ghani arrived in Qatar for a meeting with top leaders, but will not meet with Taliban officials even as peace talks are underway. 27 Americans are known to have traveled to Iraq or Syria to join the Islamic State terror group. They're all back on U.S. soil, and 10 have been charged or have been convicted of terrorism-related offenses. I spoke with VOA National Security Correspondent Jeff Selden to learn more.
These are individuals who the Justice Department was able to gather evidence on, who have indications that they participated, trained with Islamic State in Iraq and Syria, took part either in fighting with Islamic State in Iraq and Syria. One of those charged is accused of being an ISIS emir. At one point. Others took smaller roles, whether with logistics or with telecommunications, but they're all charged with attempting to provide or providing material support to the Islamic State. Those are the 10 that have been charged. There's another 17, and sources tell me that these other 17 are individuals who are connected. They're called by the U.S. government Islamic State affiliates. It is their family members of the Islamic State fighters who or in this case, American Islamic State fighters, most of whom have been charged. 15 of the 17 are still minors. They're children who have been repatriated and brought back. Two of the 17 left are now adults, but they were minors when their families brought them to Syria to join Islamic State.
Have any of the individuals who have been repatriated spoken out and given statements possibly to the media or other outlets as to why they chose to leave the United States and participate in activities by the Islamic State group?
They've talked variously about it. Some have talked more than others. For example, one of the very first cases and one of the very first convictions is an individual named Mohammed Jamal Qais, who, as a young man, traveled to Syria. He was convicted. He's from Alexandria, Virginia, just outside of D.C. And he talked about thinking it was a good idea at the time, but then realized it was a mistake and did what he said. He argued that he did what he could to leave, but still, given the evidence against him, he was convicted and sent to prison.
Now, we're talking about 17 individuals. Does this represent all the Americans that have left the United States to go fight with the Islamic State group, or does the Justice Department believe that there are more?
There are likely more Americans. Individual researchers, including those at George Washington University's program on extremism, say that if you add in Americans who have returned on their own from the Islamic State, the number of Americans charged with crimes is now at least 19. And these researchers say there's evidence that there are more Americans out there. It's just probably a matter of whether or not the Justice Department and U.S. officials can get enough evidence to bring them back through the repatriation process. The other wild card, the other variable, is that there may be Americans who went to join ISIS who are still there, but they're not being held by the SDF. They may be held by other entities, other groups, other nations, and there is not a repatriation process right now set up to deal with them if they exist.
Jeff Selden is VOA's national security correspondent.
The Nobel Assembly at Karolinska Institutet has today decided to award the 2020 Nobel Prize in Physiology or Medicine jointly to Harvey J. Alter, Michael Horton, and Charles M. Rice for the discovery of hepatitis C virus.
The Nobel Committee said the work by Americans Harvey J. Alter and Charles M. Rice, as well as British scientist Michael Houghton, help explain a major source of blood-borne hepatitis that couldn't be explained by the hepatitis A or B viruses. The World Health Organization estimates that there are over 70 million cases of hepatitis worldwide and 400,000 deaths each year. The disease is chronic and a major cause of liver inflammation and cancer. You've been listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of our entire production team, thank you very much for listening. Be sure to visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day. You can do so by pointing your web browser to voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Be well, be safe, and good night.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In a speech to the United Nations General Assembly, President Donald Trump observed that the world is engaged in a great global struggle. We have waged a fierce battle against the invisible enemy, the China virus, which has claimed countless lives in 188 countries. The United States has launched an aggressive mobilization to fight COVID-19, including producing a surplus of ventilators that could be shared with nations in need and effective therapeutics. Even now, three vaccines are in the final stage of clinical trials, said President Trump.
We will distribute a vaccine. We will defeat the virus. We will end the pandemic. And we will enter a new era of unprecedented prosperity, cooperation, and peace.
At the same time, China's leaders must be held accountable for their actions, declared President Trump.
In the earliest days of the virus, China locked down travel domestically while allowing flights to leave China and infect the world. The Chinese government and the World Health Organization, which is virtually controlled by China, falsely declared that there was no evidence of human-to-human transmission.
President Trump also urged the United Nations to hold China accountable for its environmental abuses.
Every year, China dumps millions and millions of tons of plastic and trash into the oceans, overfishes other countries' waters, destroys vast swaths of coral reef, and emits more toxic mercury into the atmosphere than any country anywhere in the world. China's carbon emissions are nearly twice what the U.S. has, and it's rising fast.
If the United Nations is to be an effective organization, said President Trump, it must focus on the real problems of the world. This includes terrorism, the oppression of women, forced labor, drug trafficking, human and sex trafficking, religious persecution, and the ethnic cleansing of religious minorities.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.